You are listening to IP Management Voice, your podcast about the world of IP and IP management. We talk about the smartest minds in the knowledge economy so that you can learn from them. If you want to know more, you can subscribe to our newsletter and research the latest topics on our content platform, Dplex, with the world's most important experts on IP and IP management. The content featured in this episode on value-driven IP in the digital age comes from Beat Bible.
Welcome to our deep dive today. We're going to be talking about intellectual property, you know, IP strategy and company. Specifically, how companies can adapt those strategies to thrive in the digital world.
Yeah.
We've got some excerpts here from a paper called Digitalization Needs Value-Driven IP by Beat Weibel and Rudolf Freitag.
Okay.
And one of the things that they say in here is that simply filing a ton of patents isn't the answer anymore.
Yeah, you've hit the nail on the head. The authors actually share an anecdote about companies realizing their huge patent portfolios are practically unenforceable. They call them paper tigers. Wow. All roar, no bite.
Okay, that's scary. So you think you're protected, but in reality, you might not be.
Right.
So what's the solution? They keep mentioning this term, value-driven IP. What's that all about?
Well, it's a shift in mindset. You know, think of your IP, your patents or trademarks, copyrights as strategic assets, not just a legal document.
Right.
So instead of trying to patent everything under the sun, you laser focus on protecting the specific things that make your business unique and give you a competitive edge.
So aligning your IP strategy with your actual business model and the benefits that your customers are paying for.
Exactly. It's about understanding that customers buy benefits, not just products. You know your IP should protect. What makes your offering truly stand out in the marketplace?
Now, this source material has a visual. It's figure one, and it shows how a value-driven IP strategy fits into a company's overall business plan. It's all about integration. It's not about working in a silo.
Yeah.
Can you walk us through that a bit?
Sure. Imagine you're a company and you're using what's called a business model canvas.
Okay.
It's a visual tool that helps you map out all the key parts of your business, your value propositions, your customer segments, your revenue streams, and so on. A value-driven IP strategy sits right at the heart of this canvas.
Okay, so I'm starting to see the connection. It's not just about having patents. Mm-hmm. It's about having the right patents.
Exactly. And that leads us to the two key pillars of a value-driven approach. The paper calls them ensuring freedom to operate and preventing imitation.
I have two sides of the same coin, it seems. Can you unpack those for us?
Of course. Freedom to operate is all about making sure your business isn't infringing on anyone else's IP.
Okay.
Let's say you develop a new technology, but it turns out someone else already holds a patent for something very similar.
Uh-huh.
So you either need to change your approach or negotiate with the patent holder.
Makes sense. It's like checking your blind spots before you merge onto the highway.
That's a great analogy. And the other side, preventing imitation, is about building a strong IP portfolio to keep competitors from copying your unique offering.
Okay.
Think of it as like building a fence around your most valuable assets.
Now, the paper uses a fictional e-scooter startup as an example.
Yes.
It's got this revolutionary wheel hub motor. And they're using this business model canvas we talked about to figure out their IP strategy. They're initially focused on selling directly to consumers, but they're smart enough to consider other options. What if they decide to license their technology to other e-scooter manufacturers?
Mm-hmm.
Or what if they pivot to become a component supplier?
Exactly. So they're thinking ahead, anticipating different scenarios.
Okay, so they're thinking ahead, they're anticipating different scenarios.
Exactly. Good. And that's a key aspect of value-driven IP. You're not just reacting to the present, you're proactively shaping the future.
Right.
You're considering how your business model might evolve and making sure your IP strategy can adapt.
Now, when we talk about IP protection, we're not just talking about patents, right?
Absolutely not. It's the full spectrum. Patents, designs, trademarks, copyrights, you name it. It's about using the right tool for the job.
So in the case of this e-scooter company, they might patent their core motor technology, but they'd also consider protecting the scooter's design, maybe even that cool sound it makes when it starts up.
You got it. And here's where it gets even more interesting. They might even patent alternative motor designs that they have no intention of using themselves.
Wow.
Just to block their competitors.
Okay, so that's clever. But wouldn't that stifle their own future innovation? What if one of those alternative designs
mm-hmm.
turns out to be the next big thing.
It's a calculated risk. You're sacrificing some potential future options to secure your current position.
Okay.
And it highlights the strategic thinking. That's at the heart of a value-driven IP approach.
Okay. This is all starting to make a lot of sense.
Yeah.
But let's not forget about the digital landscape. Software ecosystems, intangible assets. It's a whole different ballgame.
You're absolutely right. And there are a lot of misconceptions out there. People think, oh, you can't protect software, but that's not true at all. Copyright protects the actual code itself, but you can also use patents.
So how do software patents work? Isn't software just, well, software? How do you patent that?
It's not about patenting the lines of code themselves. It's about protecting the underlying invention, the technical solution that the software provides.
Okay.
Think of it like this. You might have a patent for a specific method of compressing data or a unique system for processing payments online.
Okay, that clarifies it a bit.
Yeah.
But what about open source software? That's a whole other can of worms, right?
It is. Open source is great for collaboration and speeding up development, but those licenses can be tricky.
Yeah,
you really need to understand the nuances to avoid any unintended consequences. Imagine using some open source code in your product. And because of the license, you're suddenly required to make your entire product open source as well.
Oh, that's a nightmare scenario. So it's not just about the technology, it's about the legal framework surrounding it.
Precisely. And that's just one example of how the digital world is changing the game for IP.
This has been an incredibly insightful discussion so far. It's amazing how much complexity there is to intellectual property.
We've only just scratched the surface. But the key takeaway is that IP is no longer just a legal issue. It's a strategic business imperative.
I couldn't agree more. This is definitely something that every entrepreneur and business leader needs to be thinking about.
Absolutely. And in the next part of our deep dive, we'll explore some of the specific challenges of protecting intangible assets in the digital age. Think data algorithms, brand reputation. That's where things get really interesting.
So we've established that in the digital age, this traditional let's patent everything approach to IP might not be the best way to go about it.
Yeah, it's really about.
But how do companies actually make this shift to a more value-driven strategy? What does that actually look like in practice?
A change in how we view IP altogether. Instead of seeing it as just a legal or technical function, companies need to weave it into their strategic planning from the very beginning.
Okay.
And that means involving IP experts early on in the development of new products and services.
Those not just the lawyers and the patent attorneys working in a silo.
Not at all. They need to be collaborating closely with product managers, marketers, even the CEO, to understand the big picture goals and how IP can support them.
I see what you mean. You need to understand the why behind a product, not just the what.
Right.
To craft an effective IP strategy.
Yeah.
So it's like the patent attorneys need to become business strategists themselves.
That's a great way to put it. And it's a skill set that's becoming increasingly valuable in the digital world. Patent attorneys need to be fluent in the language of business, understand market dynamics, and be able to translate all of that into a robust IP portfolio that's designed for maximum value.
Wow, that sounds like a tall order.
Yeah.
How can patent attorneys bridge that gap? Are we talking about a whole new breed?
In a way, yes. Of IP professional, the role is evolving. It's not enough to just be a technical expert anymore. You need to be able to connect the dots between the intricacies of an invention and the broader strategic goals of the company. You need to be able to anticipate how markets might shift, how technology might disrupt the status quo, and build that foresight into your IP strategy.
Okay, this is all fascinating stuff, but let's bring it back to our listeners for a minute. Why should someone who's not a CEO or a patent attorney care about any of this?
Because whether you're an entrepreneur, inventor, a creative professional, or just someone with a great idea, understanding these principles of value-driven IP can give you a real advantage.
So even if I'm just tinkering in my garage, work on my next big idea.
Absolutely. Yep. I need to be thinking about IP strategy from the get-go.
Yep.
It's no longer enough to just have a brilliant idea. You need to have a smart IP strategy to back it up. And that starts with understanding the principles we've been discussing. Align your IP with your business goals, protecting what truly makes your offering unique, and being proactive, not reactive.
So it's about being strategic, not just protective. Thinking ahead, anticipating challenges, and using IP as a tool.
Precisely, to build a sustainable competitive advantage. And those who grasp these principles will be the ones who thrive in the digital economy.
Speaking of the digital economy, Weibel and Freytag make another really interesting point about the limitations of traditional IP mechanisms when it comes to protecting intangible assets.
That's right. Things like data algorithms, brand reputation, patents and copyrights. Those traditional tools, they were really designed for a physical world, a world of tangible goods.
Mm-hmm.
But how do you truly protect data algorithms, the secret sauce that makes a digital business tick?
It's like trying to fit a square peg in a round hole. These intangible assets are often the most valuable components of a digital business, but they're also the hardest to protect.
It's a challenge that legal experts and business leaders are grappling with right now. The old playbook doesn't quite cut it anymore. We need new strategies, new ways of thinking about IP.
Well, the paper doesn't offer any easy answers.
Yeah.
But it does suggest that we need to start thinking outside the box. What are some of the ideas that they propose?
One idea is to focus on establishing clear legal ownership of these intangible assets very early on. Think of it like creating a detailed chain of custody for your data, your algorithms, your unique processes.
So instead of just relying on patents
what?
To protect the end product, you're building a legal framework.
Exactly. That safeguards the underlying elements, the intangible assets that give your business its edge.
Uh-huh.
And this might involve using a combination of existing legal tools, contracts, trade secret laws, even trademarks in innovative ways. So you're essentially building a multi-layered security system for your most valuable intangible assets.
This makes me think about our e-scooter example from earlier. Imagine if their innovation wasn't just a physical motor, but a sophisticated software platform that managed a fleet of his scooters, collected data on usage patterns, optimized routes, and so on.
That's a perfect example. The physical scooter itself might be important, but the real value lies in that intangible software platform, the algorithms that power it, and the data it generates. Protecting those assets becomes paramount.
So what would a value-driven IP approach look like in that scenario?
Well, they might use patents to protect the core algorithms driving their platform, copyright to protect the software code itself, and trade secret laws to protect their data analysis techniques. They might even trademark specific elements of their user interface or branding that contribute to their unique value proposition. It's about using all the tools at your disposal to build a comprehensive protection strategy.
This is where things get really interesting. It's not just about patents anymore.
You've hit the nail on the head. It's about a whole new way of thinking about intellectual property. And it's a way of thinking that's essential for success in the digital age.
This has been an incredibly thought-provoking discussion. We've covered a lot of ground.
We have. But I feel like we've only scratched the surface. And in the final part of our deep dive, we'll explore another crucial aspect of the digital IP landscape. Ecosystems.
Okay.
As more and more businesses operate within these collaborative networks, the lines of IP ownership can get blurry.
That's a great point. How do you protect your own intellectual property?
Yeah.
While still fostering collaboration and innovation.
Yeah.
Within an ecosystem.
It's a delicate balancing act, and it's a topic that deserves its own deep dive.
We've been talking about this shift towards value-driven IP and how the digital world is really shaking things up.
Right.
You mentioned ecosystems before the break and how those can get tricky when it comes to intellectual property. Can you explain why that is?
Sure. So think about it like this. In the past, a lot of companies operated in a more siloed way. They developed their products, they protected their IP, and they competed in the marketplace. But now, especially in the digital world, you see so much more collaboration.
Mm.
Companies are partnering, sharing resources, integrating their technologies. It's all about creating these interconnected ecosystems.
Okay, so it's like a shift from a solo act to a band where everyone's contributing their unique skills.
That's a great analogy to create something bigger than themselves. But here's the challenge. When you've got all these different players working together, it can be really hard to define clear lines of IP ownership.
Yeah.
Who owns what? Who gets benefit from it? How do you prevent your IP from getting diluted or even lost in the mix?
Right. If you're not careful, your secret sauce could end up getting spread all over the ecosystem.
Exactly. And you might not even realize it until it's too late. And that's why having a smart IP strategy is more important than ever. In these ecosystem environments, it's not just about protecting your own inventions. It's about understanding the IP landscape of the entire ecosystem, figuring out where you fit in, and making sure your contributions are recognized and protected.
So it's like a prenup for business partnerships in the digital age.
Might sound a little cynical, but yeah.
Need to have those tough conversations up front
about
who owns what and how the benefits will be shared.
You need clear agreements in place, not just to protect your own interests, but also to foster trust and transparency within the ecosystem. If everyone's constantly worried about getting ripped off, it creates a climate of fear and suspicion, and that stifles innovation.
So it's not just about legal contracts, it's about building a culture of collaboration.
Precisely. And shared understanding around IP. And that requires open communication, a willingness to compromise, and a recognition that everyone benefits. When the ecosystem as a whole thrives.
This all makes me think about those open source software licenses we talked about earlier. It seems like those are a key part.
They are. Of this ecosystem puzzle, open source is a great example of how collaboration and shared IP can lead to incredible innovation. But as we discussed, those licenses can be tricky. You need to understand the nuances, the different types of licenses, the implications for your own IP, and make sure you're choosing the right license for your needs.
It seems like the key takeaway here is that navigating the IP landscape in the digital age requires a whole new level of sophistication. It's not just about filing patents anymore. It's about understanding the interconnectedness of the digital world, anticipating potential challenges, and being proactive in shaping your IP strategy.
Couldn't have said it better myself. It's about recognizing that IP is not a static asset to be hoarded, but a dynamic tool to be leveraged for growth and innovation.
This whole deep dive has been eye-opening. It's amazing how much there is to think about when it comes to intellectual property.
It's a complex landscape for sure, but it's also incredibly exciting. We're seeing a real shift in how businesses approach IP, and those who embrace this new mindset will be the ones who thrive in the years to come.
Weil and Freytag leave us with one final thought-provoking question to ponder. As technology continues to blur the lines between the physical and the digital, what will the future of IP look like?
It's a question without easy answers, but it's a question that all of us need to be grappling with. Entrepreneurs, inventors, policymakers, and citizens of the digital world. We all have a stake in shaping the future of intellectual property.
Well, we hope this deep dive has sparked your curiosity and equipped you with some valuable insights to navigate this exciting new landscape. Until next time, keep innovating, keep those intellectual fires burning, and remember, the future of IP is in our hands.
Thanks for listening to IP Management Voice. If there's any topic you'd like us to cover in this podcast or on the content platform Dplex, please get in contact and let us know.